You're listening to the one show that takes you where others won't, out into the wilderness with your own personal guide, the Pilgrim on the 405, international sales trainer, Will Crist.
Well, welcome to Pilgrim Talks on this rainy day in October, and we just got some sad news. I was just talking to Paul Roberts, the producer, and 10 minutes ago it came over the wires that Steve Jobs died today. Wow. Not only are we seeing a change at the helm of Apple, but also the end of an era. No question about that. No question about that. And it's certainly on my beat because the 405 comes awfully close to Cupertino and all of Silicon Valley up there, and lots of people up there who've been on the show. That's sad. Say goodbye to Steve, but say hello to what's new at Apple and all of the rest of the world.
And we have to wish we have to wish you a happy birthday today here, because it's your birthday here. So
That's right.
I don't know if that I don't know if that colors your birthday celebration to know that Steve Jobs passed away here, but handing of the torch from one pilgrim, one pioneer to another here.
Right, that's right. Well, we've been racing along together because the first computer I had was an Apple IIe.
Yeah, me
so
too.
That's interesting. Well, we have, we've got some very interesting conversations coming on today because in Orange County, we have lots of people in these groups called Vistage, where CEOs get together and other C-level people get together in their own groups to talk about what's going on, talk about how they might help each other, and really to walk down that road toward innovation and business changes and maximizing the quality of business, but walk down to so they're not alone. And that's a very, very important part of how business people can continue. I've asked a good friend of mine, Dave Kinnear, to be with us today. Dave has a long record of working with CEOs in Orange County, especially as a Vistage chair. So, Dave, welcome to Pilgrim Talks.
Hello, Will. It's great to be here. Thanks for inviting me. I said, thanks for inviting me. It's great to be here.
Well, good. Well, we're going to spend some time talking a little bit about what you see out in the world of business, because have you noticed changes over the last 10 years in what you're seeing CEOs do?
So to be honest, I have seen no changes in the last 10 years in the sense that things have always been changing. It's never been static.
Spoken like a true engineer.
What's happened in the last 10 years has been fairly, incredible. There have been some very, very significant changes in the last 5 years, especially with the economy and the way people are going to market.
Uh-huh. Tell me more about that.
Okay, so I think what I've noticed recently, a lot of people who were waiting in the last 2 or 3 years for things to get back to the way they used to be so they could pick up and work the way they had been working have finally come to the conclusion that it's not going to happen. And so they've been looking for new and innovative ways to change their business model to match more closely what's going on in the market, which is, it looks like, reduced consumption, which some people take as a negative, but many of the people I'm working with have taken as a positive. It means they can find a new way to go to market that will give them a competitive edge. And so that's what they've been working on.
Mm-hmm. So when you say that consumption has shrunk, is that another way to say the marketplace has fewer opportunities?
Yes, I think you could look at it that way. The level of consumption has shrunk, clearly. I mean, people see that in the GDP and they see it in their businesses directly. And I'm not sure that means anything other than there are opportunities now that we didn't have before to differentiate ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
because the consumers of services, B2B or B2C, the consumers are now looking for more value before they open their wallets and spend their money. Hmm. And that gives me an opportunity to give them a value proposition that differentiates me. Well, speaking as, you know, as a business, not me individually, as a business.
Yeah, well, to me, we got fewer opportunities in the marketplace. Do you notice that there are fewer competitors, or are there the same or more competitors for those reduced number of opportunities?
Oh, you know, that's a really good question. My observation is that in some industries, for example, take development, meaning project developments, real estate, either commercial or private. There are definitely fewer competitors. One of the guys I work with mentioned to me as we sat down and went over what his plans were, three of his major competitors in the last year have gone out of business.
Mm.
And so while there's certainly a lot less work for him to do, there are also fewer people chasing the fewer orders that there are.
Hmm. Okay. So what I've noticed is that there's still plenty of competition for those reduced, you know, the reduced opportunities.
Oh, there's definitely a lot of competition. People have definitely sharpened the pencil, so to speak. So there's competition on price. There's competition on quality of what I can deliver. There's competition on when I can deliver. So In that respect, things have gotten pretty heated.
So what do you find out there that has changed in terms of selling, of taking on those opportunities?
Ah, so my conversation around this is you can't be selling. You need to be building relationships, building trust, and adding value. Now, some people will say, well, that's the way I've always sold. And I will say, then fine, you should be doing well. But right now, I think if you think about the psychology behind this, is I'm worried about what the future is going to be. Therefore, I'm going to be careful how I use my assets. And therefore, I don't want you to try to get me to do something that I wasn't thinking about doing.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes that's, especially in commodity product, that had been the approach of a lot of people in the past, was let me just create demand for my product or service. And now I find that we need to partner up with our potential clients or users of our service, so that they see a significant value before they even think about selling to them. They want to buy. Mm-hmm. They still want to buy. They don't want to be sold.
Right.
And so
right.
I see a lot more activity around some of the things that I know that you talk about all the time, mm-hmm. Will, which is, you know, how do you build that trust and how do you get someone to understand that you're actually going to be able to help them so that they want to engage you.
Yeah. Well, now, I'm doing some thinking about that in terms of the change in the buying cycle or the buying process that buyers have, where back when you were at Toshiba, it seems to me that back there at that time, when people wanted to find out about your products or your services, they would pick up the phone and call somebody at the company, and they would be, you know, at some level, they would be tracked to salespeople. And salespeople's job was to talk to them, let them know what was going on, maybe do a little free consulting. Maybe sometimes they did too much. But that was the way that people got information. And today, they're not doing that, are they?
No,
they're
most definitely
they're going on
not.
The Internet.
That's exactly right. When my clients, customers, in other words, the CEOs I work with, when their customers call them or reach out to them, they already know most of what they need to know. They may have some additional clarifying questions they want to ask, but if they do contact either, and mostly this is email, or it's a form from the website that is emailed to, depending on the business, they pretty much know what they want to know.
Mm-hmm.
And should I somehow contact them, and that might be at a networking meeting or it might be through a referral. So if I contact them, they're not looking for me to give them any kind of a pitch. Instead, they're more likely to be already asking me questions that I can tell they understand my product and the competitor's product pretty solidly.
Mm-hmm.
So it's more of a conversation around how am I going to help you? How am I going to add value?
Mm-hmm.
What's the return on investment that I'm going to get if I were to change and do business with you?
Mm-hmm. What I'm interested in hearing, it seems to me that what's happening is that people are out searching on the internet for information. If they're searching, if they have problems that I believe my company can help solve, I can sit back and wait for them to come to me,
mm-hmm.
or I can be somehow out in that conversation area with them, holding up a card that says, anybody want to talk about these kind of problems, I'll be happy to talk with you, and I'll be able to share some information with you, and write this way to people who want to talk. That kind of problem. That to me is where a company makes themselves available to share, not with a phone call, but with content on the internet that people get at by searching. Does that make sense?
Oh, totally. I think you're right on. When I look at the not all of the guys I work with, but most of them at this point have figured out that they need to be using all the tools that are available to them, and that the tools that we have now, the internet, comprising blogs, the social media, they are finding that that's where they can add value for lots of people to see,
mm-hmm.
by answering questions, for example, on, say, LinkedIn, or Facebook, when somebody asks a question in their area of expertise, whatever that might be, and they can respond to it without a sales pitch,
mm-hmm.
but just
mm-hmm.
simply answer the question that's being asked about whatever the product or service is,
mm-hmm.
then they very often are considered to be an expert, and it's obvious what happens next. You don't have to do anything because your contact information is there. And when I get that you know how to help me with my issue, then I'm just going to contact you. It's that mm-hmm. simple.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And it seems to me that that's, you know, that when you start thinking about where salespeople, now I'm not talking about people like you and me who are really, we got our own show, right? We're service providers, and having conversations like that's pretty normal to us. But if you've got a group of 10 to 15 salespeople, their highest and best use is in taking a qualified lead and helping them to get a decision in a reasonable period of time. And what I'm seeing is that there's a major change in companies when they move from, you know, I mean, 10 years ago, if you wanted more sales, you'd say to salespeople, go out and get more leads, close more deals. And by the way, take a look over there at all those accounts that we have right now and see if you can get some more money from them. But what I'm seeing now is that there is a very clear difference in the skill set, the tools, and the desire between those people who are generating qualified leads, the people who are helping people make decisions, which are really salespeople, and those who are managing the accounts that we have. Do you see that happening?
All the time. In fact, right now I see some experimenting going on with where do I have my salesperson spend their time? And I see some of the model you just described, where the salespeople are, there's, as you mentioned at the beginning, there's a limited number of leads now. So I'm not going to necessarily going to it's not going to be easy for me to go out and generate all of a sudden 100 more leads this month, because right. that's what I need. No, the leads now are more difficult to get. The company has to help generate those leads by being out in the media, so that, and by the media I mean the internet, social media, because mm-hmm. we're even seeing, while there's still some return on the printed media, most of it is moved over to the social media. It's the targeted ads that I'm getting when I'm on the internet and Google serves up that ad. It's that targeted mm-hmm. ad now that people are paying attention to. And it's also that are generating some of the leads. And it's also being generated through the other social media like Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, when you become an expert mm-hmm. by answering questions and by being present. So I see a lot of new activity around, do I think my salespeople ought to be spending at least a significant part of their day answering those questions on our behalf through their LinkedIn account or through uh-huh. their Facebook account or the fan page for my company. So I'm uh-huh. seeing a lot of that, even on fairly high-level technical sales. I'm seeing a lot of that questioning about, where do I really want my salespeople spending their time? And it's probably not cold calling, because that's not going to work.
Do you think it's having salespeople who may or may not be skilled at social media, may or may not know the tools of marketing automation, and may not really want to write blogs or tweet? Do you think it's in their best interest to be doing that, or is that somebody else's job? Maybe have the persona of the salesperson, but do you think that might be somebody else's job to do it?
Well, I'm seeing a lot of, it's going to be interesting to see how it settles out, because my intuition as a sales executive myself for many years is that, no, I don't want my highly paid salespeople spending too much time. I'm not quite sure that they shouldn't spend any time, but I certainly don't want them spending too much time on Facebook or LinkedIn,
right.
unless it's pretty targeted. On the other hand, I would want them being directed maybe by my business development or marketing people to, hey, look, we've got some stuff going on that we need your help with on this account. Can you go answer some of these questions for us? That I could see happening. I think that's where it might be heading.
Mm-hmm.
But right now I'm seeing some people saying, geez, you know, I got my sales guys off of sales cold calling. That doesn't work anymore. So mm-hmm. what I've got them doing is this kind of warm lead stuff coming off of our fan page on Facebook.
Yeah, but now, see, now that's an issue, because the people who are looking around, my belief is they're going to take any kind of email, telephone call that has to do with selling, if it's before they're ready to talk, they're going to take that as an intrusion and just dump it.
I totally agree. You're right.
All right, so what I'm wondering is, when you think about the highest and best use of those trained killers who are salespeople, right? Now, I'm assuming that they know how to do it well, that the highest and best use of them is taking a highly qualified lead that they, you know, that fits what the company is looking for, and help them to, you know, move them to a decision, and that it's not going to cost nearly as much to use people who are trained at generating leads by using marketing automation tools that are highly metricized now. I mean, you can know exactly what people are doing, how many people responded to the email, how many opened it, how many and who comes to the website, and they want to do that. That's their area of expertise. I'm just seeing that kind of differentiation happen.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you. I think that's where it's going to wind up. And I think that, you know, back to your original question, do I see things changing? Have things changed in the last 10 years? Well, you just nailed about five of them when you spoke about what's going on with the new, I'll call it new, social media and the internet vis-a-vis the what we used to call advertising. I guess we can still call it advertising, because it used to be, you remember the old saying, my marketing budget is about 50% ROI. It's just I don't know which 50% is giving me the ROI.
Right.
But now we know. We know. When we're using any of the internet electronic media, whether it's my website, whether it's my blog, whether it's my electronic newsletter, whether it's Facebook, we know what we're getting back on click-throughs. And we can tell which of those click-throughs turn into actual orders. And we know where they're coming from. We know what inquiries. We know what words people are using to search. It's amazing. We have more feedback now on how effective our ads are. Our messages. Let's not even call them ads, because let's call them messages.
Right, right. Now, once we've developed, you know, once we are aware that those tools are there, there is a kind of an impulse on the salesperson's part to say, "Oh, I can use those tools." Learning how to use LinkedIn effectively, Constant Contact, marketing automation tools like Marketo or what are some of the other ones? Pardot. Using those, that's not something salespeople are skilled at doing, know how to do, or even want to do, except out of desperation.
You know, I think some of the best salespeople are learning on their own how to use these tools and how effective they are for their particular product or service that they're selling. And one thing I know about salespeople, and I'll bet you'll back me up on this one, is they're very good at figuring out how they should spend their time to maximize their sales. They're very good at that. And you will probably also remember. Now, let's see, you had a birthday today, I think.
I did.
Is that correct?
Yeah. Yeah, that's right.
And if I remember correctly, there's quite a few years under your belt. And
about
so you're,
65.
You're going to remember this statement. When I'm clerking, I'm not working.
Right.
And that's the salesperson's mantra. They hate filling out reports.
Yep.
They hate filling out forms. You have a hard time getting them using your lead tracking, Salesforce automation, whatever it is you're using.
Right.
You have a hard time getting them to do that. But the minute you show them a return on their investment, that they get better qualified leads, or they get leads for prospects that are almost already closed, boy, they're behind you 100%.
Well, and what I'm suggesting is that if owners of companies or business leaders recognize that the highest and best use of that salesperson's time is with one of those highly qualified leads, and then they look at the cost of generating those leads by using marketing, and then getting marketing into the place where marketing says, my job is to generate X number, the required number on a monthly basis, weekly basis, of these kind of people. I'm going to go out and learn how to do that, says the marketing people. And that's how they are evaluated. Not how many awards have you done, not how creative is your material, not how many people have come to the website or how many people opened the email, but how many qualified leads have you generated through your nurturing campaigns, through your email, webinar, white paper, whatever you want to do, but go get them and bring them to the salespeople, because salespeople need those to generate the quota that the company needs. How do we get that message across to business owners?
I agree with exactly where you're going. And what's happening here is you've just described one of the major, what I call, shifts in, maybe there should be a more energetic word, but it, to me it's a shift in the way we use our workforce. You named it earlier. We no longer want our sales guys going out doing all the cold calling that you need to get the thousands of leads into your funnel so that you can get the 100 out that you need to make the next call to. We're not going to be doing that anymore. A lot of that is getting automated. And the clients, you know, it's not, it's almost like here's another case where we ask the consumer, the customer, our clients to do more of our work for us almost. We, you know, we haven't asked them to do that, but they're doing that. They're going and doing all of that pre-work themselves to qualify for themselves who they want for a vendor or what kind of a product or service they're really looking for. So our job is to make sure that they find us. So all of a sudden, marketing's job is to make sure that they're doing what is necessary for the customer to find us where they're looking. And they're no longer looking in Yellow Book, Yellow Pages. They're looking on the internet.
Yes. And so, and they're simply looking by Googling. Shift. I mean, it's as simple as saying, how do I hire people better? And you know whose name's going to come up. It's going to be Brad Remillard, right?
It almost always is.
Yeah. And when they see it, and if Brad weren't there, somebody else would be.
Yeah. And also,
so
to your
Brad
point,
has to have his card, his page, his link out there, so that when somebody asks that question, he's there saying, whenever you're ready to talk, come over here. Here's some information for you. When you want to hear a webinar, here I am. When you want to talk to me personally, here's the telephone number. I'm not calling you. You're calling me.
Exactly. Exactly right. And, you know, you just pointed out another couple of what I think are kind of the moderate shifts. You know, if I look at what happens to me, you see, because I'm a Vistage chair, and because there's my profile is out all over the place. You know, I've got my own website. I've got a page on the Vistage website that describes who I am as a chair. I have my own blog. I have my own newsletter going out. I have a Facebook account. I have a LinkedIn. You know, all, it's all out there.
You got Google Plus.
And I'm on G Plus. Boy, and I'm telling you, that you, I hope you're watching that, Will, because that is really evolving quickly. It's wonderful.
Yeah.
By the way, one of the reasons it's wonderful is because if you now, this was a revelation to me, when they first put G Plus out, I'm looking at it saying, wait a minute, this is Google. How can they have search that's so terrible? The search is terrible on G Plus. Well, that got fixed last week. And I have to tell you, when I want to go find out who's looking for a leadership coach or who's looking for a business coach, I can find it very quickly now on what's being said on G+. They've got that nailed.
Yeah.
So, anyway, I didn't want to necessarily go down that rabbit hole.
No, but Dave, my point is, you and I can do that because we are service providers. The salesperson who's going to make his money or her money by closing deals needs to have the leads coming in on a regular basis. That's where they're going to generate the most money. Can you imagine if you and I had those leads coming in for us, what that would do to the number of people we could be helping?
Right, and that actually, you took me right where I wanted to go with this, because what I was about to say is, because my profile is all out there and because it has words about Vistage, now when I'm on Google looking for something I want to look for, like, what's the latest news on, you know, leadership? Maybe I'm Googling leadership seminars or something along those lines.
Mm-hmm.
Guess what's on the right-hand side? I almost always get a Vistage ad.
Mm-hmm.
And I almost always get some kind of a coaching ad, because all of my profile talks about that's what I'm interested in.
Yep. I know you got lots of things that you're doing. Can you stick around for a little bit more?
Sure, I'd be delighted.
All right, so we're going to take a break here. We're going to hear from some of the friends over at Sandler, and then we'll be right back.
I'll be here.
Hi, I'm Carl Graff of Sailor Training, and I'm here to talk about Sailor Rule Number 2, don't spill your candy in the lobby. So what has a spilled box of candy got to do with the sales call? Everything. When you go on a sales call, you take your box of candy. Your box of candy is your knowledge, your expertise. And salespeople are so anxious to open and spill their candy. When a prospect shares a concern that might be able to be addressed by your product and services, the salesperson launches into presentation mode, highlighting their features and benefits. They might throw in a third-party testimonial or two for good measure. Candy, candy, and more candy. While there's time to share your candy, of course, it's during the formal presentation, demonstration, process review. And that's only if you and the prospect together have truly understand the issues they're trying to resolve. In the initial phase of the sales call, leave the candy in the box. Your task is to fully understand the prospect's situation. You have to make sure that you uncover the prospect's issues before you make your presentation. During the initial phase of the sales call, the candy must remain in the box. Your task is to uncover the prospect's issues. Your task is to ask questions to uncover the problems that need to be addressed or the goals that need to be achieved. Your task is to truly identify if your products and services will truly address and help the prospect. Your task is to leave the candy in the box. If you're routinely dropping off material, information, marketing material without truly understanding the prospect's buying motives, then you're creating the habit of spilling your candy in the lobby. Ask yourself this question. If they have your information, if they have your pricing, do they really ever need to talk to you again? Ask yourself, would they ever take your information and shop your competitors? Get enough facts to fully understand the opportunity. And if you get far enough through the development cycle to make a presentation, then open your box of candy. Yes, you should and can help the prospect. But the best way to help them early on in the process is to ask them questions, talk as little as possible, and get them to talk as much as possible. Your task is to gather the information, not dispense it, and save the box of candy for later.
Well, here we are. Welcome back. Now, so Dave, we were talking about this role differentiation so that the salesperson is not responsible for from picking it up where the anonymous lead hits the website all the way through account management at the other end. That's way too many skills, different needs and wants. Wouldn't you agree?
I do. And I think that's exactly what's happening. As I mentioned, because people are a little bit unsure about where this, I guess the saying everybody likes is the new normal, which I'm kind of amused because I never thought there was a normal, but that's okay. This new normal, we're not sure where it's going, so they're throwing some stuff against the wall, and they're going to see what sticks. And I think what's going to wind up sticking is, oh, this has shifted, and I think it's going exactly where you've already gone. Because, as usual, Will, you're kind of out ahead of the pack. I think where this, what my observation is where this is going to wind up is right where you already are. Which is, okay, we need experts to now generate our good, highly qualified leads because my leads are self-qualifying themselves on the internet to provide to our people who can take us through the final process, which is helping that customer, client, business make the final decision that, okay, I am now ready to pull the trigger. And I don't know that you'll disagree with me. That final, I'm going to pull the trigger, is taking longer than it used to take.
Well, this is my belief right now. My belief is when you start making that clarity about who's responsible for generating the leads, who's responsible for managing the accounts afterward, and who's responsible for getting that closure to happen. When you have those kinds of training going on, you have somebody who's being trained to manage the accounts, which means that they really know how to communicate, they know how to, you know, talk somebody off the ledge when they're extremely angry, getting ready to leave. They know how to nurture that relationship on a long-term basis. That's account management. When you have somebody on the other end generating leads, they're learning how to do that, and goodness knows that's changing every day. The new tools that are coming out, the new ways that, you know, blogs are in, blogs are out, emails in, emails, all of that changes, so they're being trained on that. That leaves, to me, that leaves the selling part, that decision-making. When you start looking at that and focusing on that, if salespeople really have a strong, repeatable, consistent selling process, I think the selling cycle will shorten somewhat.
Well, I think it will eventually, but for right now, what I'm seeing is super cautious before I pull the trigger.
Sure.
And I'm with you on that. I think that will eventually go back to a, maybe not what it used to be in terms of easy to throw a couple $1,000s here, a couple $1,000s there to solve the problem. Back 4 years ago, 5 years ago, was not a big deal. Yeah, you know, I'll give it a shot. It's not that much.
Right.
But right now, every nickel is being watched.
Yeah.
And I'm wanting to be sure. Now, as things move along, what's going to happen, I agree with you again, that this will settle out and I will start being more methodical about, okay, I can make this decision when I understand this part of the process is done and I've got the information up to 80% of what would be perfect, I'll make my decision. I agree with you, that's going to happen. Right now, I'm seeing it still being very cautious before I pull that trigger. You got to have a sales guy, person, who is well-trained and not selling at that point, because that will absolutely be a put-off
right
to the guy who's wanting to buy, not wanting
yep
to be sold. I want to buy.
Salesperson's job is to help that person make a decision. The decision might be no, I don't, you know, now that I look at it, I don't need it, I don't want it ever. It might be yes, I'm ready to buy, or it might be I want to buy, but not right now. And to me, where the quota comes from for that quarter is the people who say yes. If the world out there that's coming at that salesperson is not producing enough people who are ready to say yes, willing to say yes, ready, then we need more qualified leads coming. We need a bigger pool. But the faster that that salesperson can help people get to understand whether they are a no, not now, or a yes, the more efficient they can be. I have seen so many salespeople whose funnels are bloated with, oh, well, they're going to buy someday. Maybe not. And certainly not going to be this quarter. So what are you going to be doing? Well, I'm just going to keep talking with them. Why? I think that's part, you know, I'm not saying the whole thing about the LinkedIn sales cycle is the responsibility of the salesperson, but I think that there's something about the disciplined approach that salesperson can take in assisting people to make a decision. That's where I'm seeing a selling system that's strong, comprehensive, and repeatable.
And I think you also have connected some dots here, because I watch what you do, and I get an excellent value-adding newsletter from you each month.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, I'm looking at that saying, okay, so this is the right way for me to, quote-unquote, stay in touch. And the reason I want to do that, it follows up on what you just said, which is, I'm not ready to buy right now. I've made the decision I am not going to buy right now. So,
yep,
stay in touch, because I didn't say never. I just said I'm not buying right now. And we now have more tools than ever to gauge how well we're staying in touch with you.
Yeah.
And how effective that is.
Yeah.
And they're all being tied together. I think you know as well as I do that we've automated lead tracking very well, and we can tie it to the social media. We can tie it to that newsletter that goes out, and we can see that, oh, you know what? Dave is still opening that newsletter. That's
right.
A good sign, right?
Yep.
So to your point, I think this is going to settle out. The good news is, we're finding new ways to add value and build trust with our clients. It's easier than ever to either establish the fact that I have good credibility in the product that I'm selling or the service that I'm providing, or it's real easy to do the opposite and blow it and yeah. destroy my trust and credibility. So we have to be very careful about what's being done on the internet and the social media that's tied to me or my company. So, you know, it's a double-edged sword, but boy, I'm seeing things moving at incredible speeds.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think that's what I'm picking up on is that whole it's no longer just prospecting. It's lead generation. It doesn't mean the salespeople can't continue to do what they were doing. I mean, going to networking is, you know, that's going to generate some relationships, and maybe some of the other service providers who they're meeting in the networking meetings will introduce them to the right people. But it's not going to be at the volume that they need. But this whole other world of being present on the internet, of being available, and knowing what to say to nurture those folks, having some lead scoring criteria so that you know when it's appropriate to call. This person is ready to hear from a salesperson. This person is not. That's what I'm looking at, and I think that's going to be a skill set that's going to develop very quickly.
Yeah, I agree with you. The other kind of the shadow side of this is, and I'll use you as an example, because this just happened in the last couple of days. Uh-huh. I was at a meeting where I happened to be talking to someone who was kind of complaining about salespeople and what they were or weren't doing. Instead of me going through this big pitch, I said, look, here, I'm going to send you an email. There's going to be a link to this gentleman, Will Crist. I want you to take a look at what he's doing, and when you're ready, let me know. I will give you an introduction.
Uh-huh.
This guy is going to be well-steeped in your material by uh-huh. the time he says, hey, this guy's interesting. Give me an introduction.
Mm-hmm.
And that's exactly what you were pointing out before, that he's going to do all the work. He's going to know a lot about you and about Sandler before he calls.
Mm-hmm.
And your job is going to be at that point not to scare him off by, you know, as our little break said, opening the box of candy too quick. But,
right.
You know, the beauty of that message was, in my mind, when you open that box of candy too quick, you're selling.
Yeah.
You may not get it, but that's what you're doing. You're selling. You may think you're saying, hey, features, benefits, this is why this is great. And you're not looking at it that way, but you're selling. And you're selling too soon in the process. You haven't built trust yet, and you haven't provided value yet. And I know you and I agree on that.
Yeah,
so
absolutely.
That's what the issue is there, right?
Yes. Yeah, and absolutely.
That's what's changing for sales. Because when I pick up the phone, I've already looked at all the little nuggets of what it is you provide as a service mm-hmm. or a product, and I don't need you to open that box of candy. I've already peeked in it anyway.
Mm-hmm.
I need you to now tell me how you're going to add value, help me understand a little bit more about the credibility, and develop uh-huh. an attachment and a trust.
Uh-huh.
And then we can do business.
Well, I would suggest that what happens in that call is that salesperson is there to find out whether or not they can help. Because they have to approach that with, I don't know if I can help you until I have a lot more information. I'm going to need to ask you a lot of questions. Is that okay?
Yeah, and I have the perfect answer to that. I know you've looked at me on the website. You know who I am.
Sure.
I don't know about you yet. May I ask a few questions?
Absolutely. That's the kind of attitude, and together we're going to discover whether or not we think we can help each other, whether or not you think I can help you, whether I can think that I can help you. Because if either one of us come up with a no, let's not waste any time.
Right.
And that, to me, is what's going to shorten the sales cycle dramatically.
I totally agree. And I also agree that in my network of people that I refer, one of the reasons I am very comfortable referring you is I know you're going to do that. That if you don't believe that you're going to be able to help or add value to the person mm-hmm. I refer to you, you're going to have my back and maintain my credibility by saying, gee, you know, John, I really appreciate Dave getting us together. I'm really not sure that I'm the one that's going to be able to help you. Let me give you another name.
Sure. Absolutely. Yeah. Yep. And getting clear about the prospective client's issues are, how important they are, what kind of pain that's causing in the company, you know, what level of commitment is there to make a change, what's that costing the company? Getting clear about those kinds of things before it even begins helps shorten the whole process and get very clear about whether or not this is going to... And, you know, I think that takes time, but I don't think that's time that the salesperson should be spending. There's somebody else that should be doing that. And we've got a lot of automated tools, which means it doesn't have to be a whole lot of personal time. And for businesses under $50 million in revenue, I think that could be outsourced so easily.
Yeah, I don't disagree. And let's think about this for a minute. What if we're wrong and if the sales cycle really has stretched out? And let's just say if your normal sales cycle was, let's say it's a complicated sale, and let's say that normally it took you about 6 months to take a prospect who really had a need to all the needs, the discovery, and finally place the order. Mm-hmm. And let's just imagine that right now, because of the economy and because I'm worried about cash and I'm worried about all the things that we're worried about in this economy, that 6 months is now 10 months.
Mm-hmm.
But I find it easy to believe at least 5, maybe even 6 of those now 10 months of the sales process is being handled mostly by the client, him or herself, through their research and their competitive research about mm-hmm. the different products and services that are out there that they're doing on their own before they yeah. even start to engage people. So you and I may be looking at saying, wow, my sales cycle has come in. It's not 6 months anymore. It's 4 months or it's
yeah.
5 months.
Yeah.
And the answer is no, it really isn't. But 5 months is being spent by the prospective client themselves.
If you've got some roadmaps of people I'm working with are calling them customer journeys, that that the customer journey has changed dramatically in the last 5 years. So if you're paying attention and you're on that journey, you know, a part of your company is on that journey with the prospect through that customer journey, you're going to know when it's time to insert the salesperson. And it's going to be
much more
appropriate.
You know, I love it. I think you're right on, Will. And what popped into my head when you said this was, have you been on, I'm sure you have been, a tour of a museum where you walk in and they say, hey, look, here's the self-guided audio tour. We're going to give you this box that you strap around your neck, and it's going to either, it has a digital file, an MP3 file inside that you listen to, or maybe it's wirelessly connected to the system that's feeding you the information. But you go on the tour yourself, and mm-hmm. when you get to a certain point, it'll tell you, now move to the next point, and you're listening to everything, but it's fine unless what? Unless you want to ask some questions. Mm-hmm. That you really want to know more about this statue or this display.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's when you seek out one of the people at the museum who are trained to tell you about what's going on there, and they understand the details behind it.
Mm-hmm.
Then you go to them and say, you know, I got all this other stuff, that's great, but I really want to know about this. And you ask your question, and mm-hmm. you get a response from another human being. I think we're kind of going along those lines in the new purchasing, not sales, the new purchasing process.
I agree. It's the new buyer's system. Absolutely.
Yep.
Listen, I've got the book that I'm putting together on this. I've got the draft of the PDF. Let me send it to you, and take a look at it, and maybe we can you can give me some thoughts about it. And anybody else who's listening that wants a copy of the draft, send me an email at willchrist@willchrist.com, and we'll have a conversation about it. So, Dave, we're going to have to get out of here. This has been a wonderful, wonderful 50 minutes. So tell people how they can get in touch with you if they want to talk more.
Ah, well, they can find me on the web at execleadercoach.com. They can send an email to Dave at that same domain, or they can pick up the phone and call me at 949-436-0222. And I would be delighted to hear from them.
Great. Super. Thanks, Dave. I'm sure we'll have lots more conversations, and I'll send you this. Did you want me to send it to you?
I certainly do. I'd look forward to it.
I'll send it to you tonight, and we can have a conversation about it. Super. Thanks a lot for being with us, Dave.
It's my pleasure, and happy birthday, Will.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yep, bye-bye
now. And so there you have it. Lots of people out there in Vistage talking about these kind of issues, and it's not just a matter of how do we get more sales. It's a matter of what has changed out there that's getting in the way of us getting more sales. So as we begin to understand the process and the changes in the process, then we can begin to understand what it is we need to change to make that happen. So the next time that you hear somebody say, you know, it's really tough out there, it's hard to get new sales, suggest to them it's not hard, it's just that they haven't learned a system that's going to get them what they want yet. And that's part of the discovery. So, good to be with you today. Sorry that Steve Jobs has left us, but we want to thank him for showing us this enormous, huge room that he's left us to bustle in. So, from the Pilgrim on the 405, thanks for being with us today. Look forward to seeing you, talking to you next Wednesday.
You've been listening to the one and only Pilgrim on the 405, only on OCTalkRadio.net.